Today is March 11th, 1976. My name is Nancy Smith. Today I'm interviewing Mrs. Judd. This will be the second part of this interview. We are in her house in the Middletown area.
And in warm weather, it was something. Hot weather, you'd just almost die before you get out of there. Now this Joe Cave here, he was just an old man that we knew, and we always liked him because he could tell you really some old tales. I'll tell you, back in slave time.
Oh, that's really?
We loved him because he used to come to our house after I was married, and he'd spend the night with us, and he'd sit and tell us all these stories about the slaves, you know.
I wonder how he knew about them.
He lived in their time, in slave time. He was about 100 then, and he used to stop at our house. And that's been about 50 years.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
he lived down at Pine Grove,
He lived down in Pine Grove.
And there was a little store down there?
Yeah, there was two stores down there, but then the one we went to was a nearest when we stopped there always.
When you would go down there, was there a road you could follow?
Like a path? Well, just a path down through the mountain. Just a little path to follow, that's all. You had to keep your eyes open if you kept in it in summertime when the bushes was out. But in wintertime, it was easier to follow.
I'll turn this on too.
Well, that's where Pine Grove is. But that, I don't know why we brought that up about Joe Cave. But he was a great old fellow, you know, really interesting to talk to. It was wonderful. I liked to talk to him. He'd come over home. I believe, though, the reason I told you that was about a flower bush I had out in the yard. A big, huge wygelia is what it was. And it was just loaded with bloom when he was over there one time. And he said, "Now, what kind of a blossom do you call that?" You know, in the back in old times, they always called flowers. They were blossoms, you know. He said, "What kind of a blossom do you call that?" I said, "Uncle Joe," I said, "that's a wygelia." "Oh," he said, "wild Jesus. Well, I do know." He said, "What a name for a blossom." Wild Jesus. I'll never forget that poor soul. And then another time he came down, a long time after that. But it still had blooms on it. It bloomed all summer when it started. He come down there again and he said, "Now, you told me what kind of a blossom this was one time, but do you know I've done forgot it? What did you say this was?" I said, "A wygelia," and I said it as plain as I could, thought he would catch it, you know. "Oh, that's right, wild Jesus," he said, "I should remember."
Was he related to the caves in Dark Hollow down there? Joe Cave? Or was that was a different cave family?
I think they were different caves. Now, I won't say. I wouldn't say that because I really don't know that. He could be related to those caves over there because there was three different groups of them lived down there in Dark Hollow. Because there was those Ashby Caves, the Tom Caves, and Newman Caves.
They're all three different.
They married each other. They all married round and around. I don't know one of them that didn't marry. Well, now Dade Thomas, she was one of them. She was a cave. She married John Thomas. But now the rest of them, as far as I know, they all married.
More caves.
Married more caves. Now John Weekly, he married one of the caves. That was Tom Cave's sister. He married. Yeah. Now the Glore Field, it was Glore.
G-L-O-R-E.
There are people that raised stock on that place out there. That was the Glores from down there in Madison, down around Surrey down there. The Glores lived down there.
It's an area, passed, you mean?
Yeah.
The Glores?
The Glore Field was a big area. But they called it the Glore Field because the Glores always pastured it.
Oh, I see. Glore Field.
Yeah. Okay. And it was Glore Field.
Okay.
And you know where the Red Gate is? Well, we never went the road when we went to Skyland. We left the road there, just slanted along, went out, and that was all in fields, clear to Skyland then. Nothing but pasture field. nothing but pasture fields, and the most beautiful ferns you have ever seen all through those fields.
Hmm.
They, the turfs, those turfs stood up that high.
Hmm.
You could stand up in them.
Yeah, it changed a lot.
Mm, my. You wouldn't believe it. But we always went on, we'd leave there, and that would cut off miles, you know, going out to Skyland, and go through the Glory Field.
Hmm.
That was the Glory Field out there.
Let's see. And then Bensfield, I guess.
Bensfield, yeah. That's right down from Old Big Meadows, right down, just right down the hill there.
Okay.
You just turn, that's where the families all lived right around there, you know. Of course, now Frank, he lived right there. I showed you where he lived, I think, up there, didn't I?
Yeah, I think I will have well, you draw probably, a map, and then that way I can look at myself.
Well, he lived right there. You can stand there in the building there at the front, front and look right down there where he lived. I could take you right down there to where the house sat. And then there was another house set right out just a short distance from that. And both of them, of course, there was a huge big spring at both places, the best water, just runs so clear. And there was different families lived in that house, the other one. But the old Frank Wickley place, there was never, I never knew anybody but them to live in that house in my time, I heard.
One thing, on the other side of the tape, when I ran out of tape last time, you had just started to tell the story about Betsy Hurt going down to a store.
Yeah.
And, you want to go ahead and tell me about
Let
that
Let me go
again?
Ahead and look about this chicken. Betsy, she was my great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She went down to Siri to the store. That'll sound good on it. I know. And they have a lot of men out there on the porch, and they had a bet up, $10 bet, as to who could raise that barrel of molasses up off of the floor, lift it up. And she walked up on the porch, and she said, "What's going on here?" And they said, "Well, we got a bet up to see who can raise this barrel of molasses off the floor." Well, she said, "Well, get out of the way, get out of the way." She said, "Can't you lift it?" And they said, "Well, we haven't done it yet." And they said, "Oh, go on, Aunt Betsy said, you can't lift that." Well, she said, "You just get out of my way." So they stepped aside, and she just reached down, kept her back straight, you know, they said just straight. She was a big woman. And she just reached down and lifted it right off the floor. She said, "Does that prove it?" It's almost unbelievable, really, but she did it.
Yeah.
And she set it down. They said, she said, "Now where's the $10? Well, they said, she said, "No, well to it now. She said, you said you had the bed up and you couldn't do it. Where's the $10? So they had to give it to her.
Yeah.
That was fair.
Right. Yeah, that was a bet.
So they didn't bother her anymore about lifting the molasses. So she lifted the barrel of molasses and they gave her the $10.
Sounds like she was kind of...
Oh, she was a stout, very stout.
Yeah.
She was purebred Indian.
I was wondering, do you remember any of the stories, say, like Joe Cave told about the slaves? Or
yes, I do remember some of them. He told us about Beidlers and a lot of the Brubakers and Spittlers and all of them up along between Luray and Stanley. They all owned slaves down in there, you know. And he said... I don't remember if he said he was with his mother or father, but I think he must have been with his parents. Anyway, he said that they were coming from down in there somewhere, and they were selling slaves at Beidler's that day.
Hmm.
And they had, the men that were there buying these slaves were from North Carolina, they learned.
Mm-hmm.
And when they had these, had bought what they wanted, they were walking, you see,
mm-hmm.
and he said they lined these slaves up in front of them, each one that had their number of slaves they had bought. They lined them up in front of them, men and women. Some of those women had little tiny babies, and they didn't want the babies. They didn't want those babies. They only wanted the women and the men. They didn't want to be bothered with them babies. So he said that they... caught up with them right along, making them go just as fast as they could walk, you know, just marched them along. And they had those long whips, you know, and they'd reach out and hit one and make them step it up, you know.
Mm.
And
okay.
Yeah, it is. So he said that they got on up there. They kind of kept walk fast, keep up with them, so they could see what they was, you know, what they would really do. And he said that this one man got off his horse, and this woman was crying. And she was just a person who couldn't walk too fast, maybe. I don't know what, maybe she was sick. It's hard to tell. And he took this baby out of her arms and took it to the feet and slapped its brains out against the tree and threw it over in a brush pile. And he said he'd never forget that sight as long as he lived. Hmm. Wow. They didn't want those babies. Hmm. Now, can you blame the colored people for anything they do today?
Hmm. That's something, yeah.
When you think of that. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And they had their own flesh and blood. They sold their own flesh and blood on those auction blocks. Hmm. Because those men, they had babies by those colored women, those slaves. And then they didn't want them little babies. Sell their own flesh and blood.
Whew. How about up in the mountains? Did you all ever have stories about, ghosts?
Or oh, yes.
Things like that? Particular things?
Oh, dear. I used to sit and pray. I didn't even have ears. My grandmother and grandparents used to sit and tell ghost stories at night. And I was scared to death to go to bed. Mm. And even after I went to bed, I was scared to... I'd just burn up under the cover, afraid to take the cover off my head. It was terrible. I used to tell ghost stories.
Was there any particular ghost, or did they have a story of a ghost that was in a special place up there or anything like
well,
that?
Well, a lot of it was true stories, really. And then, of course, they used to tell different things that they... A lot of that stuff, I've forgotten that. Mm-hmm. But I remember one time, they used to be real true stories as when there was a lot of wild animals up there in the mountains. And my grandmother and my great-grandmother, they had been down, and a couple of the other girls, to Siri to get groceries. And they were in the night getting back up through the mountain. And they always carried a pine torch in case it was night when they, before they got home, they'd have that pine torch and they'd light it. And carry it, each one carry a torch, keep that fire going to keep the animals from bothering them at night. And when they come down there, well, below the Butter Hill Spring, I don't know if you know where that's at or not, right down below where Uncle Wes lived, you go on just over the steep hill down there, and there's a low place there with the thoroughfare, where the thoroughfare road comes around there. There's a spring that used to be, it's dry now, they say it's been dry for years and is never known to be dry. But it's the Butter Hill Spring, and everybody always going home from down below up from into the mountain. They always stopped there and rested and drank water. Done it a many times myself. And but they came up this time. There was two ways you could come up. You could come up and around the thoroughfare road from down Meadows Holler, or else you could come straight up Richard Holler and come up by what they call the old laid place, down straight up through there. And which was near, really, but it was not as good a road to travel. Mm-hmm. So they were coming up right above the old lay place, and some animal came just bounding right out of the bush, right out there, blowing and blowing, and their eyes shining, you know. And they said, "Keep your torch going." Said, "Keep it waving. Don't let it falter. If you do, he'll get a hold of us." Mm-hmm. So they kept that torch waving to keep him away. And said he just couldn't stand not getting a hold of one of them, you know. But they'd hold that old torch out and keep it burning. Pine, you know, burns like oil, you know.
Yeah.
And they kept that burning. That's all saved their lives.
What did they think it was? Did they have any idea?
Well, they said it was a wolf. They thought it was a wolf.
Yeah.
Or a panther. Hmm. Well, really, they thought it was a panther. Mm-hmm. That's what they really thought it was, but... Somebody said it could have been a wolf, but I think, really, I do think there was panthers up in there then. Mm-hmm.
Like, you mean like mountain lions, or?
Yeah, panther. Mm-hmm. Or wolves. There's lots of wolves up in there then. But that's been a long, long time. That's when my grandmother was real young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what were some of the animals that, either when you were living there, or when your mother talked about, or your great-grandmother talked about, that were around that area?
Well... At that time, around in my time now, once in a while, you would hear of, there was plenty of bears up there. Of course, there was bears then, but they never bothered anything unless there was a sow out had had pigs or something, then they'd come and eat the pigs. And out there in the Laurel, my, they used to eat a lot of pigs out there. But as far as vicious animals, I really don't think there was too many then in my time, because there was bobcats and things like that, which I imagine is bobcats up there yet, plenty of. Of course, there was in my day. I saw one. My brother and I went to milk the cow one evening, and we lived up there, and it was coming up a storm. It was terrible. And we went on up by above my uncle's. We went about a mile up the mountain to the pasture field to milk the cow. So we went up there to milk, and just as we got over the fence, I saw this terrible-looking thing sitting over on there. Log fence. They made cut down trees and made log fences around the fields, you know. That's where they made fences to
keep the cow in.
And so my brother said, he's a slow talking somebody anyway, he said, Lula, he said, that ain't no groundhog. I said, I know it's not a groundhog. All his teeth was shining, you know, and he was bowed real up in the back, you know, and he's a horrible looking thing. And so the cow was right up on that same side of the field, only right away on up above this thing. And we were scared to death almost. So I said, well, let's go up here through the middle, and then we can cut across and bring the cow down. Yes, but he said, suppose that thing jumps on us when we come down by there. I said, well, we'll have to do something because this storm's coming. It's terrible. It just looks awful. And so we started up through there, and he said, let's throw a little rock at it. Maybe it'll jump off the fence and go on out through there. So we got a little, both of us got a little rock. We decided what one done the other would do, you know. So we both threw a little rock. And boy, he was ready to take us on right there. He wouldn't budge an inch. So we went on up through the field, cut across, went over to the cow. I tried to get her to stand still, let me milk her up there, but she was used to coming down to the fence down there to be milked. And down she came. So I didn't stay too long. I didn't milk her too dry, I'll tell you. But we got that milk, and before we got home, such a storm you never seen. I think my milk bucket was was half water till I got home. But all that thing, he was a bobcat.
Yeah.
Uncle Emmett had tried and tried and tried to trap that thing, and he couldn't catch it to save his soul. He was the shrewdest thing you ever saw. So we went up and told Uncle Emmett that we had seen his bobcat. We're sure that's what it was. Because after he raised up, you could see that bob tail, you know. They got a short tail, you know, real short tail. And I knew then it was a bobcat. So then he just put an effort, real special effort, to get over in there and set the traps. He finally got him. He's a dangerous thing. My, they'll kill calves, you know. Anything jump on and kill them. Get food.
Did the men trap very often or hunt animals very often?
Well, not too much. They didn't trap too much. They'd have, sometimes in wintertime, they'd have rabbit traps and catch rabbits to eat. But them days, they bought rabbits. There's a bounty on rabbits, you know. You could sell rabbits, you sell foxes or anything, and just catch them. And take them on. But now, of course, they used to catch skunks.
Oh, really?
But they skinned them. They would skin them and stretch the hide on a board until it was dry. And then take them and sell them. You had to dry them before you could sell them. But they used to catch a lot of rabbits and eat them. But then, after they got to be a good price, lots of them would catch them just to sell them. They would take them down to Siri there, and they would be packed down in barrels. In the winter time, they wouldn't take them another time, and ship to the cities to eat. People would eat them.
How about snakes? Were there many snakes?
Well, there was not too many. Oh, now there was places. There was places where there was plenty, lots of snakes. But, well, I don't know if you call it, I guess a lot of people that seen two or three, they'd think there was a lot of snakes. But for me, I was raised up in that snake country. And they never bothered me at all. I mean, I never gave it a thought. We used to go out and pick huckleberries all day. Well, we'd see maybe a couple rattlesnakes, and maybe we'd see a couple copperheads, and Used to be so many of those old house moccasins up in there.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. We lived out there at the Broyles place. We built our house there. And where we lived. And right below the house, we cleaned off. We had a cornfield down there. And a pile of rocks, a big, all those huge piles of rocks in there. And my mother and father was down there one day hoeing corn. And my daddy said, Mama said, watch out now, here's a copper, here's a house moccasin. And he said, where there's one, there's more. So he said, you be careful. So he killed that with a huge, great big thing. And they're just like as dangerous as a copperhead. Mm. But you don't see too many of them anymore, and whatever happened to them. Mm-mm. And before they got through around that rock pile, digging around there, they killed seven.
My heavens.
Seven. Yeah. Those great, they were big house moccasins. They're gray.
Hmm. Now this gray. Is the Broyles place, which is down by the Marine camp?
Yeah, no, yeah. Now that's, yeah, just that's, they're at the Broyles place, but the Broyles place was just out, big field in there, nothing but a huge, big pasture field. It's all an orchard, mm-hmm. but it was pastured all the time. And that's where the Broyles place is. But we lived right, just over the fence out from there.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it was called that down at the Broyles place before mm-hmm. we lived. Was just betwixt and between, mm-hmm. just about a quarter of a mile from the Hoover camp mm-hmm. where we lived, mm-hmm. just straight out through there. But we seen lots of snakes. And did you ever see a hoop snake? There used to be lots mm-hmm. of those in that up
no.
in there.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
What are they?
Well, they roll up like a hoop. They've got a horn on the end of their tail.
Huh.
It's just a real solid horn. Sticks up on the end of their tail. And they roll up like a hook. And they bellow like a calf. If you hear them, you can't tell them from a calf bellow and save your soul.
Huh.
And they'll, if you can see them when they start to roll, you can easy dodge them. Because once they set their...
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. they're coming at you. Yeah. They'll if you jump out of the way, they'll go on. You see, huh. But if they hit you, that's it.
Huh, you mean they'll kill you?
If they kill you instantly, almost. That's the most poisonous snake. Huh. Used to be terrible. We lived up there. There was a man and woman lived, well, in that area in there. And this man was out in the woods working, and this hoop snake came down through the woods and struck him right in the heel. He had on boots. And he struck the heel of that boot with that horn. Well, he never gave it a thought. It didn't go all the way through. He didn't think, you know. And it wasn't long till his foot and leg began to swell terrible. And, well, of course, he didn't wear them boots on just certain times out where it was necessary, you know. And so he died. This terrible, his leg just swelled up and bursted, you know, all causing his whole body, and he just died in no time. But they never thought anything about that boot. So this woman, a long time after that, I don't know how long, but she remarried. And her second husband wore those boots. And here he turns up with the same thing. So that...
It's still poisoning started, or something?
Yes, yeah. It was still in there. And that started her to thinking. And they went and got this boot, and I think cut it down or anyway so they could really see, and that horn had broke off, and that gum, it was that hard rubber, you know, them days it was good rubber, it wasn't like it is now, synthetic stuff. But it had gone through that heel of that boot just enough that it just touched his heel enough to scrape it a little bit, you know, just now, and it never noticed it.
Huh.
But that's what it was. Killed both of them.
Did you ever see them yourself when you were out around?
No, I've never seen one, but there used to be one right above our house there. But we were always on the lookout for it. But I've never seen one. I always wanted to see one.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Grandstaff came over to our place one time. We lived up there years after that. And he said, I had a scare a while ago. He said, it's been a long time since I heard a hoop snake. But he said, I heard one. He said, it's over there. It's been there all the time. But he said, I don't know where it's been. Around somewhere where I didn't hear it, but it said I heard beller.
That's something.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Just sounds like a calf, you know. And when he does that, he's ready to start for you. And so he said, believe me, he said, I've run till I'm out of breath. He said, I heard it, and I knew what it was meant to hurt, because he'd heard it before. So he said, I'm scared now to start back.
was there thought to be a lot of those snakes up
no,
in the mountains?
There wasn't many of them.
Not too many
no,
of them?
Not very many of them. I don't know, but you know, the rattlesnakes used to kill out the other snakes a lot. But I don't know that now they're mixing. Did you know that?
Well, I know there's both rattlesnakes and
copperheads. Yeah. Well, always has associated, you know. They've always associated together. If you find a rattlesnake and a den, you're going to find copperheads. If you find a copperhead den, there's going to be rattlesnakes there. Now, over on the other side of the mountain, well, toward the Rag Mountain, the old Rag Mountain. Well, now, we used to live over there. And they used to be what they call, well, you know where the White Oak Falls is, way down back there. And we used to go, you could come up the old Rag Mountain, come across there to the White Oak Falls. But it was a long walk, but it could be done. It was done then. My daddy used to go up there from where we lived, up to the White Oak Falls and fish. A lot of trout fishing that way. There used to be a lot of them. And so he used to go up there and fish. So he decided one day it was rainy and a good time to trout fish, you know. So he went up there to trout fish. And he decided he'd go, instead of going on over to the Nicholas's, up the way he always went, he'd take a shortcut up across and then cross to the falls. It wouldn't be as much hard walking. So he said he walked up pretty close to, well, right below the falls. And he thought, well, I'll go cross here and I'll be sure I won't miss the holes of water where he always fished in. So he started across and said he just walked out on this flat rock. And just when he walked out on this flat rock, he heard this rattle. One warning the others, you know. And said he just looked right down, right plumb in front of his feet, and there laid the biggest rattlesnake. And he said, now why? But he guessed when that rattled, they all showed up. He said he didn't know whether to just stand there or jump which way. He said everywhere he looked, there was rattlesnakes and copperheads. And he said they were just singing. Started to, you know, really singing. And he said he just thought, well, I'll back the way I come. But he jumped over one. There's one, just when he jumped off of the rock, he jumped over it, and as far as he could jump, and went the other way. But he said he never in all his life ever saw anything like that. He'd gone up in there dozens of times to fish. But now that was a real rattlesnake den up
there. Yeah, that must have been.
Yeah, it was terrible. Thousands of them. Well, up there at Mary's Rock, you know where Mary's Rock is. Well, when they came through, that's on the opposite side from here, going toward Big Meadows. When the contractors were in there excavating and making that highway through there, they were starting to go through the Mary's Rock Tunnel then. And the rattlesnakes, there was a rattlesnake and copperhead den in there. But that was nothing but just solid rock in there. There wasn't any, I guess you couldn't have found a spoonful of dirt hardly. It was nothing but rock. But they were in there by the thousands. Never so terrible. When they went in there, those big machine, that big machinery, you know, rooting out that stuff in there. He said that they were so thick it made the men so sick. The poison. They were just hissing, you know, and just biting at everything they could get at, and they're throwing that poison out. And it made the men so sick they had something to take someone to the hospital. They were just that sick. They couldn't stand the smell of it. It was terrible. One day, they killed 80, that same day that they got into them, they killed 86 rattlesnakes. And I forget, with the machinery, just rooted them out, just rooted them up and ground them up. They counted 86, but they didn't know how many they killed. 86 rattlesnakes, and I forget how many copperheads they said they killed that day. Just that one time. And a lot of the men were afraid to ever go back there, but they went back then and finally got through there. But it was an awful mess. It's a wonder that now that you don't see more rattlesnakes.
No, they don't seem to be real common.
I just don't understand what happened to them. I just don't. Well, you could walk out up there any time and We'll see a rattlesnake laying around, yeah. Think anything about it, just mm-hmm. zip something and kill him, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Throw a big rock on his head, or take a big stick and beat him to death, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what's become of the snakes, I really don't. Ethel and I used to go up there when she was able to walk, and we used to enjoy tramping through the mountains up there, you know. And we started up to Benzo Field from down on the Hoover Camp down there. We started up to Benz Field. We decided we were going to walk up there, take the old road up from the Marine Camp there up through to Benz Field, a lot near. So just as we left the road, we found where the old road come down. You could always tell. You can follow those old roads yet. And we started up this old road, oh, just a short distance from the Rapidan road, comes up the Rapidan there. And I said, well, I'm going to get myself a stick to walk with. I said, I'd rather have one. It'll kind of help me if I slip or something. But it's hard to get anything. It's what's on the ground is rotten, you know. But they had chopped some little saplings like along in there for something, I guess clearing along the road, you know. And there's a maple, a little maple there. Oh, a little maple's about that big. Made a dandy straight stick to walk with. And a good one to kill a snake with, you know. So I stooped down to pick this up, to get my foot on it, to break it off. And Ethel said, Lula, look right in front of you, but don't move. I just looked, and there he laid. Huge, big black rattler. And I said, well, I see. And I couldn't get that stick broke off there to save my soul. And right where we were at, now that's a strange thing, we couldn't find one rock. Except one little flat rock was about that long and about that wide. And I picked that up. I said, if I could just get one crack right on top of his head, I think I could fix him enough that I could kill him with something else, maybe. And I just walked close enough up to, because they can jump their length, you know. They'll coil up and then they can jump their length. You better judge their length or you're done for. So he was coiled and that tail stuck. But do you know he never rattled?
No. Huh.
And I never saw one in my life that didn't rattle. And I said to Billy one time, a cousin down there, and I said, Billy, I said, we saw a rattlesnake with him. And I said, he didn't rattle. Didn't hear a sound out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, he meant business right then. He was ready to strike you.
Yeah.
So whenever they don't rattle, you better move, because they're ready to get you right there. Mm-hmm. But I never did see one in life that he wouldn't rattle. He'll let you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. It was a huge one, great big thing. But we went on up through the woods a piece, and I couldn't find a stick nowhere that I could break off. I said, well, we going up here without anything. I said, we better go back. Because I said, if we had something, that we could, a hoe or something with us,
mm-hmm.
to protect ourselves, we'd be all right. But we didn't have a thing with us. Well, we had the hoe in the car way down below where the chain was across the road, about a mile down the road. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't go back after it.
Were there wild turkeys around when you were living
Well,
up there?
Well, there was never many wild turkeys up there. Mm-hmm. Very few.
Mm-hmm.
But now there used to be a lot of pheasants and grouse, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was very, very few turkeys,
mm-hmm.
very few. You seldom ever seen a wild turkey.
How about, was there a school up there?
Yes.
During most of the years you were there?
Yes, that house you're living in
yeah.
was
mm-hmm.
a school.
Mm-hmm. Did many of the kids go to it?
Well, it was close enough, they went, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. But the teacher, they never could get a teacher would stay up there. They didn't like it up there in the mountain, you see. The teachers,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go up there, maybe teach a month or so, and they was homesick. They wanted
mm-hmm.
to go home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way that went. And my brother, funny thing, the teacher that was they had up there, she was from down below Crigler'sville down there somewhere, and she came up there. And, of course, my brother, if I do say it, he was a right smart little fellow, mm-hmm. you know. And she couldn't tell him a thing.
Yeah.
Everything she told, he knew it. And she said, you know what I'm going to do one day? She said, I'm going to just give you the work and let's see how you get along with it. She said, I think you know. She said, you tell me things that I don't know. another teacher.
Because she did know quite a bit then, yeah.
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 And so after that, she'd sit and read a book and let him teach school. So that's where school went. Hmm. So it wasn't too long until she pulled out of there. She didn't like it up there in that.
So most of the teachers didn't stay too long.
Do you know where that school sat at?
No,
you know
I don't.
Where it was at?
No, where was it?
It
no.
was right, well, you know where I told you John Weekly lived.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my uncle lived right below his house, in the house where my uncle Emmett and Aunt Ardina lived and had all their children, raised their children there. But they had moved out before the park took over to Cumberland, mm-hmm. Maryland, where mm-hmm. some of their children settled. They had a son was an engineer on the Western Maryland.
Hmm.
And they had daughters that had married and moved out, so they moved out. My Uncle George moved into that house. Uncle George Burke, my uncle by, was half uncle, but I loved him dearly. He always loved Uncle George. And he lived there then when the school was there. And it was his son that caught the groundhog for President Hoover.
Oh, uh-huh.
His son, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that story. Let's see. Do you remember how that story goes? I remember it's in that Camp Hoover book, which I
yes, I never read that book, yeah. but I know the story of it. I forget. Well, President Hoover was so nice to those people up there. I mean, he was really a nice man, as far as when it comes to a human being, he was. Everybody up there liked him. But I don't know how he got onto this groundhog thing. I knew then, but I've forgotten.
Yeah.
But anyway, he caught this groundhog for President Hoover and took it to him.
Hmm.
That's how they got the picture of him.
Did you ever see Hoover yourself?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One time we were coming across Chapman's Mountain down there. Do you know where Chapman's Mountain is? That's on down the road before you come from over in at Seary. Well, from Crigglersville, rather.
Mm-hmm.
You know where the Hoover Road is? Called the Hoover Road goes up across the down Chapman Mountain down into the Rapidan, then up to the camp.
Hmm.
Well, we were going up Chapman's Mountain, going on over and up the Rapidan home, and we met President Hoover right on that road. They were going to Washington that evening, and we were going up, and they were coming down. And if we didn't have a time trying to get off the road for that procession to go by, and of course, I don't know how many cars there were of them, you know. Of course, his staff with him and everything. So, but that we really liked that. We did. We got to see him there.
Yeah.
You know, and it was great for us.
And you think that the people did like him, or that he seemed to be
yes.
a good person?
Oh yes, mm-hmm. yes, he was. I really think he was. I think people have learned since that President Hoover was a lot better man than he got credit for being.
Mm-hmm.
He really was.
Mm-hmm.
I think when a country gets into a certain state of affairs like they are now. It isn't one man don't do that.
Oh, yeah, it's more than just one.
Oh, yes. It takes a lot of maneuvering around and a lot of dirty, crooked work to put the government on the rocks. And that has already been done. And that wasn't done by one man, by any means.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
Not by one man.
Do you remember the winters while you were growing up? Were they quite a bit different than they
are
today?
Oh, yes. The winters were altogether different then.
Hmm.
Yes, they were. We had winter. When winter came, we had winter up there. I'll tell you, we had winter. I seen a snow one time in April. That was the biggest snow I ever saw. And it snowed till it would have been up to that window right there. Well, up different people worked the men that lived around different places, they knew people that were older people that were snowed under. And up where John Weekly lived, of course, they lived right against the hill there. And they had a porch. That porch was. And that snow covered that house.
Oh,
it just covered the house over and just come right down and right on down to the ground on the north side. And they were completely shut in there, completely closed in. And they went up there and, you know, kept shoveling until they got up there, a lot of men around, and to see if they were all right. They were under that snow in there.
Mm.
They shoveled in, come in this way in here in the yard, and shoveled in to the porch, and got a hole through that snow in the porch, and went to see if they were. Oh, the biggest snow I ever saw. Never saw anything like it. People snowed in up there for a long time. I'll tell you, even in April. Hmm. That was the 24th of April.
Hmm. I wonder what year that was.
I don't remember. Hmm. I really don't remember what year it was. I wish I had a... Hmm. Then you don't think about taking down dates, you know, important thing. Hmm. But I don't know. I really don't know what year that was. But I will remember that snow. And not only that one, but many, many more. We used to go out and chop down, get in wood, and the snow would be right up around here.
Hmm.
Drag it in, cut it up, carry it in the house. Hmm.
Do people mind the winter, or?
No, didn't anybody seem to mind it.
Yeah.
No, indeed. The women, when it started snowing, you'd see them get out their old rag bags and quilt pieces and things and do all that kind of stuff in wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Mind it a bit. Get up and get a meal and go back and sit down and do the same thing over until the snow was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the men have to get out and do things. And animals to feed and things like that. But it was rough winters up in there. I've seen it rough. Out there at Skyland, I've seen it. Of course, now the road's different. The road ain't nothing like it used to be. Because the road then... just a dirt road, and water ran right along in that road all the way along there.
Mm.
Just as clear as crystal, running in the road.
Mm-hmm.
I waded in the meantime barefooted.
Mm-hmm.
Just felt so good, and your feet be so hot in the summertime, you know. And then in winter, I've seen it, you know, that Franklin, the Crescent Rock, really.
Mm-hmm.
It was always called, used to call it the Sarah Rock.
Mm-hmm.
The story of that is that a girl, Sarah's girl, jumped off of there, you know, and committed mm-hmm. suicide. Because she was jilted by her boyfriend. Anyway, I've seen it, that draft up over that rock would freeze that fog and the vapor there from them trees right from the rock,
mm-hmm.
right straight back over that top there, back over that top solid.
Hmm.
From one tree to the other.
Hmm.
And you walk through that, that was a paradise.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the ice storms are pretty.
That was the most beautiful. I'll mm-hmm. never forget that, those scenes. Never, mm-hmm. never. You never see that no more. But now we were up there this winter. My grandson was down here from Ohio. And we went up, and there was a lot of ice
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Just
it
beautiful.
It is real pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think things like that are equally as beautiful as the summertime. I really do.
Oh, I do too.
Mm. Oh, yes. I like that as well as I do the other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whenever I enjoyed anything more than I did that day. It was just so pretty. But I've seen it like that up there at the Crescent Rock. It was right straight back. That draft would just keep it drawn right through the tunnel. It would actually freeze from one tree to the other. It just looked like it's completely closed up there.
Now, this isn't by the tunnel. You mean at...
No, that's up at the Crescent Rock, the other side of...
Yeah, I know where that is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever walk out on that?
On Crescent Rock?
Mm-hmm.
No, just driven by there.
Oh, my goodness, girl, you missed a lot.
Yeah.
Don't ever go by there. Just stop and look down over there. That's really something.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's why that did that, because it's like that all the time. Of course, then the trees were close together, you know, there. It was just nothing but trees across there. And there used to be so many of those blue spruce up there. Through there, it was just full of them. Nobody ever knew where they come from, how they got there, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Never knew. They were there since I can remember anything. But there's still a lot of them right back there from the road back through there.
Mm. I've seen some, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have... gone in there and take them out.
Mm.
A lot of people
mm-hmm.
used to take out some in there.
Yeah.
But, of course, they're not allowed to do it now. But if I found a nice little one up there, I wouldn't be both picking it up and taking it.
Yeah.
No, I really wouldn't. Because, after all, that's my home.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I just like to have a little, if I can find a nice little. I'll never forget one time Ethel and I was up there, my cousin, and we like to go back, you know, through the mountain, just places where we know about but haven't been. So that day we decided we would, it was foggy, just as foggy as it could get, terrible foggy. But we wanted to walk back up through there to that top, right, you know, from the road on back up in there, and just see what it looked like back in there. So we went up through there and, of course, parked the car right down the side of the road. And we had been up in there wandering around, you know, looking and admiring this and admiring that, you know. After a while, we heard somebody whistle. Whistle, real shrill, shrill whistle, you know. I said, uh-oh. I said, somebody's hunting us. I knew it was a ranger. And I said, I bet the ranger thinks we are lost. And I said, he sees that car sitting down there now, and he thinks somebody's lost up here. So he kept whistling. We just moseying around. After a while, he blowed the horn, blowed and blowed. We didn't say a thing. We just moseyed. We started to mosey on down toward the road. After a while, he blowed that whistle again real shrill, you know. And so we started to come on back around the bluff like and come was going to come on back to the road. And, well, he was coming up through there. I guess he thought maybe we'd wandered up through there. He wouldn't know where we were. But he, we got, well, he got almost to us, right? On us before he saw us, you know. He said, are you lost? I said, no, but I think you are. He said, you had me scared to death. I thought somebody lost up in here. I said, no, I'm not lost. Not at all. I said, I was shared a long years before you were. I said, I know.